Is mommy pretty?
Your mother? Yeah, she's beautiful.
I think so too.
Yeah, I mean, not in a classical sense, but more in a zombie takeout kind of bookish indie podcast kind of thing.
What's up? Welcome to episode 338 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Moving Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, let's just get straight to this week's movie, which is from 2013, Escape from Tomorrow. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by lawyers. When someone makes a bad movie in your amusement park, please stick your lawyers on them and spare the world from having to see it.
And also brought to you by Figurative Jizz. Doesn't work with Siemens for some reason.
Anybody out there putting a band together, that needs to be a name.
You're
Figurative
welcome.
Jazz.
Wow.
Good
this
luck.
Is probably one of the most difficult ones I've had to do.
I normally say I've been waiting to hear this or kind of mocking you. This time I'm just going to say good luck.
Whew. All right. So we have a family on vacation. The father... the very beginning, the father's getting a call from his boss at work, and he's firing him over the phone and telling him, well, enjoy your vacation anyway. You've got to try some particular ride, and the kids just love it, so you should try it to have a nice life. Then, of course, he gets locked out by his son on the balcony because, you know, kids do the darndest thing.
Kind of reminded me of Rollins' Worst Day Ever.
I guess so. but anyway, he decides to keep this from his family because they want to enjoy one last day at the park. And just when you think the day is pretty much done, there's always a little bit more. they keep making you think that, oh, okay, we're just going to stop and then that's going to be it. And, no, we're going to go. Hmm. But as he's out, he notices these ridiculously young girls. Mm-hmm. One's still wearing braces.
Well, for the record, one of the actors was in her early 20s. The one who wasn't wearing braces.
But they were playing.
Yeah, playing younger. Teenager.
Yes. And they were French, and he was enamored with them, and just fantasized about them all the time.
And creeping the entire park with his son to check them out.
Yeah, or his daughter.
Yeah, at times her daughter, yeah.
And so, I mean, they make him sympathetic, but then they don't.
I don't think he was ever really sympathetic. Maybe at the very beginning when he got fired and locked out. That's about it.
Well, there's this whole thing of alienation, but we'll get into that in a bit.
Yeah.
It's this whole series of misadventures where he doesn't watch after his kids enough and misplaces them. But when they're on one ride, and I believe it's a small world in reality, the ride they were on, they just changed the music, of course. Mm-hmm. That things start getting trippy.
One of my suggested titles was It's a Trippy World After All.
Right. Dysfunctional Family Acid Trip is mine. Uh-huh. And, right. I mean, there's just all sorts of hallucinations throughout with really... I guess they explain it in the end, but I'm not really sure what that was. So yeah, he goes on this whole misadventures. There's, but then there's this whole conspiracy about robots in the park and stuff, and he gets captured himself. And
in the words of Dr. Evil, it got weird.
Yeah, then he then escapes, and then they just let him go about, even though he escapes and loses his daughter again, and there's an evil princess, and hilarity ensues. In a matter of speaking, I guess.
Now, when we were talking about this after the show last week, you had said that you had been waiting for a while to see this and really looking forward to it. And I made it abundantly clear repeatedly that you should, you know, mitigate your expectations. Was that right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, well, first, the poster that, you know, I saw on my Netflix queue mm-hmm. is a hand of Mickey Mouse with blood dripping from it. And if I'm remembering right, the description on that Netflix gave the illusion of it being a horror film. Mm-hmm. You know, like there was something happens at the park.
Mm-hmm. And when I was watching the movie early on, I was talking to someone on Skype and I had described it as a horror movie set in Disneyland. I misspoke a little. It's actually Disney World. But it then stops being a horror movie.
Well, it's confusing because there's multiple parks that they use, actually. Like, I think they use the California Disneyland, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
But they also use Epcot.
Mm-hmm.
I think. That's where, like, the castle is, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a long time since I've been there myself.
Okay.
We're talking 30-something years or something.
I've never been. So.
You're not missing much.
I've always been more of a Warner Brothers guy.
But anyway, it's like 15 minutes into it, and I'm kind of like, well, where's the first, you know, body, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like, okay.
Well, actually, the first death is right at the very beginning. The guy who got beheaded in the park.
Oh.
That's off the top.
You kind of don't even see that, though.
Yeah, you kind of see if his head hit something. And incidentally, based on a real incident, someone was killed on Big Thunder Mountain when the ride derailed. They weren't decapitated, though, as in the movie.
I mean, shit like that happens, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say all the time, but more often than you think, probably. Yeah,
probably.
But, yeah, so I'm waiting for, like, you know, when's the, oh, it's going to be the evil, you know, princess that's going to, or the evil queen that's going to be the, you know, the villain that's killing people or doing whatever. And then, no, it's not that either.
He doesn't die till the end. And I'm not going to bother with spoilers, with worrying about spoilers in this thing.
Well, because you know what? We could tell them what happened, and you're still not going to really know what the fuck happened, because I don't know what happened
here. He kind of dies at the end. One version of him does. And it's fucking cat flu.
Well, right. And so, I mean... We're kind of skipping to the end here.
Well, man. Yeah, let's roll back. You were talking about deaths, and the only death in the damn movie is at the end, and it's cat flu. Though, speaking of a horror movie, Elliot does look evil. Like, that kid belongs in an Omen movie. The kid who plays his son.
He does. Pretty good. You know, I gotta say, like, a lot of the acting and stuff in this was pretty damn good, actually.
Although, Roy Abramson, the lead who played Jim, has a lot of credits. He's worked a lot. He's a very experienced actor. But he was so ham-fisted in this. And maybe that's the director or the script. They just kind of made it impossible for me to like the guy at all. And they kept hammering in how bad he is. You know, lying to his wife, you know, creeping on these young girls.
Yeah, I don't know if we're supposed to like him or... I mean, he is what he is, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But is he what he is? Like, what was any of this? Was any of this real?
True. Yeah. Now, on the positive side, it was very well shot for being shot guerrilla style. For those who aren't aware of the film.
Shot guerrilla style whatsoever, honestly.
I don't think it was?
I'm not buying that at all.
The official line is that Disney didn't give them permission to shoot, so they had to, you know, hide and kind of in the park and kind of shoot it surreptitiously. Actors had the script on their phones, and they used the same kind of cameras that you know, regular tourists would have.
Right.
In fact, he what was the director's name? Randy Moore wanted to keep it so quiet that after principal photography was completed, he had it edited in South Korea. And at the time of the premiere, Disney stated that it was aware of the film and has since included it in the online supplement of Disney A to Z, the official encyclopedia.
Exactly. I mean, this wasn't gorilla.
Not trauma style gorilla.
People... video shit in that park all the time, yeah, of course. True. People are on vacation. They're going to stop people from filming anything in the park.
Mm-hmm.
They could have cease and desist any of this, like the characters that are used.
Yeah, they could have and should have sued at any time, yeah.
Like there's, you know, they use Winnie the Pooh, they use the Evil Queen, or, you know, the witch.
There's a shot toward the end that is very clearly, you know, footage shot at Disneyland on a handycam of a bunch of costume characters in a line together.
Right. They could have killed this or gotten them to cut a lot of parts out of it. Mm. Now, the question I, of course, is what the fuck was Siemens deal?
Is that like, an actual company? I'm not familiar.
Yeah, well, maybe they don't exist anymore. I don't know. Okay. But, I mean, I thought they did. I thought it was, I mean, that is like a computer company.
Okay. And they did mention the name because they never mentioned Disney. Well, he mentions Disney once and he censors it.
No, they still exist.
Okay.
They, you know, $79 billion in revenue last year.
And they not just mentioned Siemens, but they had the name, or Siemens, but they had the name, you know, on Epcot Center in the lights.
Right.
You know, as opposed to the one mention of Disney had to be censored.
And honestly, I think that's what this movie is about more than anything else. It is about the hatred for these parks.
Maybe, yeah. That makes sense.
Because, I mean, Epcot Center, especially, the one thing that stands out of my mind from it, where the corporate sponsorship of a lot of exhibits there.
Mm, yeah.
Like, there was a GM-sponsored exhibit, I remember, mocking the idea of a hydrogen engine and everything back in the 80s. Because, I mean, the only way really you can get around is oil, you know? I mean, seriously. God. Serious propaganda for corporations. Mm. And that's what that Tomorrow World golf ball or testicle, they say, which, I mean, a testicle would not look like that, no, all jagged and shit.
Don't think so. That would be painful.
But, right, that's what stands out of my mind. I think a lot of that, I mean, it's not just the corporate propaganda that they're rallying against. It's how families go there, I guess, with these crazy expectations and just how shitty it is. So it's amazing that Disney did not clamp down on this. They had to have been in on it in some way.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, some of the effect shots, particularly in It's a Small World, look really good. You know, some of the faces changing and when his son's eyes turn black. And normally to pull that stuff off, the camera has to be locked down so you can track it with the effect.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And but it did not look like shaky cam during those effect shots. I don't know how you could lock a camera down on a moving cart in a ride.
Right. That's what, I mean, well, the other thing is they used a lot of green screen.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the shots, particularly when the girls were walking toward Space Mountain, when he kind of forces the kid to go on it, that was so clearly green screened.
I think a lot of the Epcot stuff didn't actually get shot in Epcot because Epcot's in Florida,
right?
And they filmed in California.
Mm-hmm. They probably did some establishing shots there.
Right. So I think, yeah, they filmed some things in Epcot and used that as green screen and then filmed with the actors in the California, I guess that's Disneyland, the California one. Yeah. Although, wait a minute. No, they were in the one with all the different nationalities and stuff. That's Epcot, I believe.
Yeah, that's Disney World in Florida, yeah.
Yeah, and they were actually there. They were definitely there for that. Mm. I don't know. This is a real head trip, this movie.
Although, if it is a statement about the parks themselves, that does explain why Jim starts tripping. Because they don't really explain, well, they don't explain anything, and they don't tie anything together. He's just on It's a Small World, and he starts tripping.
Well, right. He for no reason, he just starts tripping. Like, I thought they were insinuating that the cat flu thing was caught from the girl or the nurse or the queen. Like, one of his his falls from morality.
Well, the nurse, he kind of attempted to flirt with the nurse. That's about it. He followed the girls around.
Yeah.
The queen is the former princess is the one he slept with.
Okay, yeah, we'll call her the former princess.
Yeah. Incidentally, Randy Moore had the actors ride It's a Small World 12 times to get one scene right. Oh, my God. That's inhumane.
Yeah, it is. That is the worst experience a human being can go through.
But just rolling it back to the nurse a bit.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the medical staff at Disney World or Disneyland wear, but she did look a little too fantasy.
Well, right. She's the naughty nurse.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thoroughly creeped out when, you know, he's leading his son through the park and he sees the girls and he gives the son a look and they kind of nod at each other. Like, there's a moment where they clearly decide, yeah, we're going to follow them.
Yeah, and it's weird because the son is, like, not really on his side, but on his side.
A little bit later, he says, why are we doing this? Why are we going there? Why are we following them?
Yeah.
Even though it was clear a few seconds earlier, like, he was down.
And what are the odds of running into the same two people over and over again? in a park that ginormous.
And the princess, the former princess, was actually creepier than he was.
Of course.
I don't think they could have made him less likable, but then they made her less likable than him.
Right. And you...
And then she raped him.
Of course.
He goes unconscious and wakes up tied to a bed with her riding him.
And it's just, again, that's why I think it's more about the evils of the park, because especially her character.
Mm-hmm.
She's pretty much indicting the park directly about what the princesses do for money and, just, them serving emu legs instead of turkey legs, which who gives a fuck? Turkey and emu, who cares?
It's also a myth. They are actually turkey. It's a common urban legend that's emu.
I've had emu before. It's no big deal. You definitely know the difference because emu is like a way denser meat than turkey.
By the way, I should mention that the entire movie is in black and white. Maybe it's me. I am kind of just really over black and white, but it just seems unnecessarily pretentious.
It was a nice change of pace.
Mm-hmm.
I might have had to do with the cameras they were using.
Could have been. Yeah, it could have been necessary. Unless it's for budgetary reasons or obviously old, I'm just really not interested in black and white. It just looks like you're trying to be artsy.
And I mean, I don't know what else. I don't know. I think if you were doing it in color, you would have had to have really...
Yeah, maybe that's what it was.
Gone
it was
to, crazy.
Yeah, maybe it was to cover up some of the effects, make it look better. In which case, I can accept it.
I like that they used black and white because it left a lot of the trippiness to your imagination. Because, I'm just, what was this? That's really the question I keep coming back to in the end.
And then about two-thirds of the way through the movie, Emily, his wife, starts hallucinating, but only very briefly. Just for one scene. Right.
She finally starts understanding what's going on with him a little bit more. But she's still not really sympathetic at all, towards him. And she learns the truth, too, about the job also, and doesn't really even react to that either. It's just kind of, then we're just going to, stop this whole vacation, even though it's like the last night and there's only an hour or so left of their time there.
Right. And she does look a bit like Emily Dickinson. Now, there was one nice moment that really sold the kind of merging of fantasy and reality for me. When Jim walks off with one of the girls, one of the two French girls he's following, walks over and gives his daughter a little beast, a kiss on both cheeks, and takes his hand and they walk off together. And I was kind of buying it. I was like, what the hell is this? And then Epcot blew up. And I realized it was a fantasy.
Which I think was the excuse to make this entire movie, was to get a scene of Epcot blowing up.
Yeah.
This had to have been someone who used to work there. That's the only explanation for this movie.
And then there's an intermission about two-thirds, at the one-hour mark, there's an intermission. I just thought Python.
Definitely. It's kind of the one thing that returned my attention that... Was that before the robot scene?
That was just before. Like, the robot scene is just after that.
That's kind of when it said, oh, by the way, this is a comedy.
See, I never got that. A couple of people I saw on IMDb were saying it was a comedy, but and it all just seemed too... It seemed to take itself a bit too seriously.
Of course. And that kind of lies the problem there. It takes itself too seriously, and there's just, I don't know, a comedy. Oh, I mean, I guess you could draw comedy out of many different things, but to just have this much isolation and sadness.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's some people that find that funny, but I don't know.
There was a great moment during that scene with the scientist. He says the French are the most dangerous, and he has a French accent.
Right.
And the, as you put it, figurative jizz was just completely unnecessary, aside from giving birth to that phrase.
Well, I mean, that's what that was. I think for the fact that just some liquid let the computers blow up on their own.
Not even liquid, enough, paste.
Right, was enough for Siemens to probably want to should interject in this anyway. Uh-huh.
And the fact that it was figurative jizz and you see the word Siemens. One letter off from semen.
Right.
And then it got even more nonsensically weird after that.
Oh, yeah, he was still searching for the daughter. Mm-hmm. And he figured out that the former princess
kidnapped
must have had her. Well, and there was, of course, the person in the scooter who he kept running into. Who
the son of this one person in a scooter knocked over his daughter. She skinned her knee, and there was a whole altercation there. And then that person kept showing up again for some reason.
You know, I didn't rewatch it. But I don't think it was the son that actually did it. They said it was the son.
I watched that scene a few times. You can clearly see the son shove her and then walk back across the frame.
I had thought it was the man in the scooter that did it himself.
No, it was the kid. I could tell by his shirt. He kind of elbowed her.
Oh, okay.
And then like walked back across frame. But, okay, so he rescues the daughter from the former princess.
Right.
The dangerous French robot angle goes nowhere.
Right.
The hallucinations are never explained, except maybe with cat flu, which,
right.
Seriously? And the cat...
Oh my God, why did we call this episode Flu Ex Machina?
You can change it if you want.
Because that's what it was.
Yeah, it was.
It was the Flu Ex Machina. Damn it, I'm good.
So there's this shot of him on the toilet having the worst case of diarrhea imaginable and censoring his ass, thankfully, even though the bare breasts of the mystery woman, at that point, mystery woman were not censored.
Right.
And then he gets off the toilet, goes face first, you know, drives the bus, and hairballs come out.
Yeah.
And later on, he's found dead with cat eyes.
Yep. That happened.
There's just nothing that ties any of it together. As I've said many times, I love weird. I live for weird. But it has to have an internal logic.
Well, it's... To close your... wrap your movie up with a bad pun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he dies of cat flu, and he's carted off by these mysterious men in a van, and then another version of Jim, who we saw briefly in the scientist section, in the robot section, comes to the hotel with his wife, who was the topless mystery woman in a previous scene.
Who was the mystery woman?
His wife in another life, I guess.
But... so she had no other part in this.
You see her topless in a fantasy sequence, and then you see her in a thong in the scientist's room, and then at the end, she's his wife.
She's not one of the French girls. She's no. not. She's not the other princess.
Yeah, that's who I thought she was at first, but no. She's just shows up in those three parts, and it's like the message is he died to escape to his best life or something.
Okay, that's stupid.
Yeah.
And fuck, man, we just watched Fateful Findings last week.
Yeah.
and we still think that's stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's quite that bad. Well, we'll get to that.
Well, of course it's not that bad. I mean...
Let's just simplify this. Please no for sequels and remakes.
Yeah. Not even a full budget.
No.
Right. You're right. There's no reason to do this.
Lose all the supernatural robot horror shit and make it about a guy who has a midlife crisis in the middle of an amusement park, and that could be interesting.
Is it really, though?
Maybe not. Yeah. It'd be more interesting than this.
I just found the whole thing really sad more than anything else. Mm-hmm. Just this dude who just lost his mind or just was an asshole to begin with. And, you know, a family that was just going to be fucked up no matter what happened at the end of this anyway.
Yeah, don't bother remaking this in any way, shape, or form.
And it's like, the fact that they're trying to pass it off as a comedy, it's like, oh... Isn't this hilarious? The family doesn't have a father anymore. They showed us.
On to brains.
On to brains.
Some of the effects were nicely done. I kind of like the scientist robot section, despite the figurative jizz.
That was the best scene in the movie, really, the robot section.
Yeah.
This whole Python break from everything.
So I'm going to go too.
So the problem with it, of course, is they didn't stick with that.
Yeah.
And they just were like, okay, now back to looking for the daughter and...
And creeping on the French girls.
Yeah, more creeping on the French girl and more, with the former princess and just... it was more of the same at the end that they had in the beginning. And they really needed to just go... off the rails and just fucking even if they didn't explain it in the end, it wouldn't have been as bad as what they tried to explain it. I'm going 2.5 though, because it makes you think but it really doesn't entertain at all or hold your interest that long.
All right, so what have we learned?
Someone actually hates these parks more than I do.
And I learned that the French are the most dangerous. All right, so until next time, when we'll be reviewing Prometheus. It's got a bad rep, but I think it'll be a lot better after these 2 weeks.
Yeah. Imagine they're thinking they're going to see a horror movie, and you're like, when's this going to start? There's no, 15 minutes in, and there's nothing happening here. Uh-huh.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And if you enjoy the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review up through the science fiction double feature, The Day the Earth Stood Still and Forbidden Planet. And the recommendations list. I'd already seen it, so I knew it didn't have a chance. At least not from me. I was really curious to see how you would come down, because someone in the positive description, or say review on IMDb, mentioned Gilliam.
I don't see it either.
I just wasn't sure if you would.
No, I just didn't see that.
No.
And Gilliam usually has a much more optimistic view of the world than this. This is really bleak shit if you think about it.
Yeah. You can email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
It's a small world after all.
Over and over again. 414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life.
There you are.
Come on, let's go. Come on, hurry.
Okay, titles I have, The Disney Zone, Of Mice and Gorillas, G-U-E-R, Creeping with Kids, It's a Trippy World After All, or The Creepiest Place on Earth.
I have The Saddest Place on Earth as my first dysfunctional family acid trip, or just kind of, this is the first time we'd use like the middle of a quote, so it'd be like ellipsis, caught in a landslide, no escape from reality.